Now on Triple M's Rush Hour.
Bang! Out!
What about that?
This is the Midweek Rush.
Champagne football!
Robot building supplies, the toughest products at better prices. Call 1-300-GO-ROBOT or robotbuildingsupplies.com.au.
Triple M rocks footy.
Midweek rub time. Damien Barrett's in, as he always is. Welcome to you, Purple.
Hello, Jim, and love being in here on a Wednesday, but the usual guy's not here, and I can't say I'm unhappy
well,
about
what's
that.
What's going on with you in Bristol?
Where is he? Is he corrected?
Well, was there a bit of a cold front moved in down there in Geelong?
And yes.
We haven't spoken since we had that little skirmish on Saturday, so I'm starting to put two and two together, and I think I'm getting four.
Also, well, I did say the Supercoach was coming in, but I think that's disrespectful to the 300 games for Fitzroy and the Swans, Roosie.
Eight-time All-Australian.
Yeah, exactly right.
You can call me whatever you like. So, no, I enjoyed my time at Fitzroy. Went there at a good time with Gary Wilson and Bernie Quinlan and all those boys. So it was good fun.
I heard you during the week talk about the players, that you, when you went to Fitzroy, the amazing skill that was around you in that team, those names you just mentioned. Bernie Quinlan might be as gifted a ball user as any of us have ever seen. What is happening with the game at the moment? Why is it that we see so many kicks missing targets? And even something that you and Bill can tell us all should be a pretty easy skill, which is handballing to a bloke 2 metres away, even they're starting to miss.
Yeah, look, I think there's a number of issues. I think, without sounding like an old timer, I mean, coming home from school, what we used to do is just throw that school bag down and run out and have a kick of the footy, basketball, cricket, or whatever it was.
Yep.
So your whole upbringing was based on you kicking the ball or playing some sort of sport. I went through an under-19 system, which had some, enormously high-quality players, and you had sort of 60 guys from one Melbourne zone, and then you multiply that by 12. Mm. Now you're getting 80 kids drafted Australia-wide, so you've got to be more speculative about what they can and can't do. It's a combination for me of the lack of development externally, and I think also, as an industry, we need to look at the VFL, the SANFL, the TAC Cup, and really beef up those competitions and make sure. I got a text, I mentioned something on the couch last week, I got a text message from a development coach at one of the clubs that I had never been associated with. He said, "Roosie, you're absolutely right. I can't believe the lack of skills of some of our top round draft picks when they come into AFL football." So it's a combination of a number of things. Don't forget, we've gone from 12 teams to 18 teams.
Yeah,
right. And I said this the other day, without being controversial, I'm not going to mention any team names, but if you took two teams out of the competition and filtered those 100 players back in, the game's going to go up, clearly, because those players are going to be better than the bottom five or six at particular footy club. So there's a lot of combinations in relation to where the game's at the moment.
You hear about the budding quarterbacks, Purple, in the NFL, who go over to the high school and then the college system, and they hang a tire off a tree and just spend hours throwing balls through it. As, you know, the development coming through. Is that what we're not seeing enough?
Well, we're not seeing the development, but even if you take the NFL as a system, they're coming out of a college system. So they're coming out of an elite program. Without being too critical, our players aren't really coming out of an elite program. My son went down to my son went down to the Sandy Dragons, and this is no disrespect for them. He arrived, there was 80 kids training. Mm. Out of the Swans Academy, which is an elite system, there's 30 kids at that same level. There's 30 kids training in an elite system at the Swans Academy. He then goes down to the TAC Cup Sandy Dragon. There's 80 kids. I'm watching the first system, Billy. Yeah. You would have seen it.
Yep.
And I'm trying to work out how these kids are going to possibly get better. The poor coaches.
Yeah.
And we're paying these coaches down there, what, 20, 25 grand?
Get a look.
And they're supposed to be coaching the next. So, look, in my view, that system is completely broken and it needs to be 100%
reviewed.
Speaking
of the Swans Academy, another one lands.
Oh. Yeah, well, North would be unhappy, and so too would the Brisbane Lions, Jim.
I think they were pretty resigned.
I think they were.
I understand. Yeah.
North thought they were hyped, didn't they? With Blakey.
I was hearing lately that they were pretty resigned.
He was always going to go to Sydney, wasn't he, Roosie?
I generally didn't know, but I think you feel like the young boy grows up in Sydney. You know, all his friends externally to football are in Sydney. Yeah, they're obviously a high-quality football club. So I generally didn't know until I read the website last night or whenever it was that came on. So, my gut feel he was going to play there. But
how good a kid is he, Rudy?
Look, I've seen him play a couple of times. I've made some inquiries through some of my connections. I'm hearing anywhere from, and again, it's irrelevant now other than the points that they're going to have.
Yeah.
Cough up. I'm hearing anywhere from 1 to 12.
Gee.
Okay. You know, so
okay.
He's seriously talented.
In what's already considered a super draft.
Yeah, exactly.
Geez, his old man was a player.
Yeah, he was. Underrated. Unbelievably underrated, Johnny Blakey. So, yeah, 300 and I'm dirty on him. I had 356. He's got 365. So,
365. And not underrated at North Melbourne.
No.
He went across with when John McCarthy, didn't he? He went to Fitzroy. Johnny Blakey had already had 150 games to his name, or thereabouts.
I think he's one of only two or three players to play 150 at two clubs from memory. Yeah.
And the body was a temple, wasn't it?
Yeah, and he's still in good nick. Yeah. He had one of those wiry, of the Tuck type.
Michael Tuck.
Terry Danaher,
ever belt Michael Tuck?
No, I never got close enough to him. So.
I did. I belt him. I got reported for it. Shit at it.
Yeah.
Mate, he was wiry, and he belt your back, Tucky.
Yeah,
did you mean to?
Tough.
Well, I was angry. And he was tough. He'd let go a few, Tucky. He's not that beautiful, nice, clean player everyone thinks he is. Lee Matthews, he belt you too.
Oh, yeah.
Talking state of the game. We've got Premiership coach on board here, but some other coaches have weighed in.
Well, they have, and I'm a bit confused about this. Now, have a listen to this, Paul and Damien.
Courtesy of SEN.
SEN, of course. Two AFL coaches over the last 2 days. First of all, this is Nathan Buckley.
Too many people out there are looking for what's not right, not for what is right and what's good. And it happens this time every year about the state of the game. The game is in pretty good nick. And you'll find someone that's not happy with it, and you'll find someone with a name that's not happy with it, and you can splash that over the papers. The game is a great game, and I think it has the capacity to evolve really well, and it will continue to evolve. We don't need to play under nines and start putting players in zones. We don't need to modify the number of players on the field. Just apply the rules as they were meant to be applied.
Might be having a crack at the umpires there, but that's interesting what he says. And then Chris Fagan.
I'd probably like to see the skills of the game and entertainment and higher scoring and forwards that kick a lot of goals coming back into vogue. I think that's exciting for the fans. But, you know, when you're in the trenches, you don't think so much. You know, that's taken my coach's hat off.
Yeah.
And when you're in the trenches, you're sort of like you're trying to do what you have to do each week to be competitive and try and win games. So that means you have really good defensive systems and you can keep teams to low scores. Then when that's what you do.
Interesting, Roosie, isn't it? Two different views.
Yeah, look, I saw both those teams live on the weekend, and it's not surprising the view of both of them because I'll take the middle road. I think when you're coaching a young, very, very difficult team to coach from that point of view, you're having to implement the defensive mechanisms. It's not a negotiable because you know what Richmond are a premiership team and you know that they've won the premiership. So in order to keep your job, you actually have to implement so I can sort of sense the frustration. Yeah, that was similar to me at Melbourne. I can see what Bucks are saying. I went to that game. That was a cracking game of football. And I think where I agree with Bucks is we do every time, every year, Dame, I think you'll agree, whether it's about flooding or whether it's about congestion or umpires, we generally get to a point in the year where we all get a bit frustrated. And it always comes off the back of four or five bad games on a weekend. I saw two cracking games on the weekend. You know, the Richmond-Collingwood game was a beauty. But two mature teams, mature bodies. Gets back to what I was saying before. The day before, I'm watching Beams, Berry and McCluggage in the centre square battle against, Ward, Sheil and Deledio sort of thing. I mean, what hope have you got? You know, you've got six or seven young players playing for the Lions. The day after, you got two teams, Richmond, Collingwood, mature teams. You then turn on to West Coast and Frio. Frio have still got six or seven star players, even though they've got a sprinkling of young guys. So I can sort of get a feel for what both the coaches are talking about there.
Well, I remember Rick Charlesworth, Purple, back in the 90s, was introduced into the AFL sort of discussions a bit.
Former hockey.
Superstar. A coach and player.
And cricketer too, Bill.
First-class cricketer. And I remember hearing him say somewhere that the problem with your game, talking about the AFL, is you're way too worried about scoring and you're not anywhere near worried enough about stopping scoring. Okay. This is in the 90s and was laughed out of the comp. Everyone just said, bugger off, mate. What the hell do you know? It's taken 20 years.
We're there
but
now.
Exactly what he said would happen has happened.
But you know the funny thing is, JB, is worldwide, worldwide, teams that defend better win. Yeah. It's not like it's unique to Australian rules football. We're actually slow to catch up. Yep. It's interesting that Rick, as an international, Rick Charles, international coach, hockey coach, et cetera, et cetera, he's been around the world. I've been fortunate to spend time in America. And I believe you me, the debate is the NBA at the moment. Who's going to defend the better? NFL, what team is going to defend better in the NFL? Soccer is the greatest sport in the world. Yeah, numbers. What do they talk about? Defence.
Mm. Yep.
So we're just sort of slow to catch up. And
but you weren't. That was your go. Actually, were you at Sydney when, who was it, rang up and said, mate, you're playing ugly footy?
Yeah, Demetrio. Yeah, he was on the radio. Yeah.
Andrew Demetrio.
Jim's questioning.
Hey?
It was Jim's questioning. Triple M, Bill.
Do you take offence to that, Paul?
It wasn't as big an issue in Sydney, to be honest, because Sydney's a rugby league town, rugby union. So they actually love that brutal style of footy and the tackling and sort of the one-on-one contest we were creating. So it wasn't...
You didn't like Andrew saying it though, did you?
No, I thought it was unnecessary. I mean, it's strange for a CEO to say something about it. It'd be like saying, the CEO of Pepsi saying, geez, I wouldn't be buying Coca-Cola in... I wouldn't be buying Pepsi in Sydney. Buy Coca-Cola. It was just a bizarre thing to say from a CEO.
But I don't think he liked it, Damo.
No, I don't think he did.
Did you ring up Andrew?
No, not at all.
We didn't talk for about 3 years.
Yeah, I was supposed to do a function for the AFL and I pulled out of that. So,
and Damo, we need to touch on Bomber Thompson and the sad state of affairs that he's found himself in. And I think just feeling the temperature, that's what most people think. It's just a very sad story.
Yeah, it is. The shock that some people are saying they've had, Jim, I'm not totally getting my own head around, given that this has probably been a 10-year build-up to what happened yesterday with those charges laid by police, Bill, for trafficking and possession of drugs. And again, we'll let the courts deal with that side of it. But as you know yourself, Bill, with people at Geelong, they now associate the 2008-2009 period as being the time when Bomber's behaviour became more erratic. And even Frank Costa was on record saying that, Jim, quite recently on the Footy Show. You'd go to the Essendon part of his life and clearly that behaviour continued there, Bill, to the point where when he was appointed coach in 2014 to replace James Hird, the then CEO, Ray Gunston, took it upon himself to remove himself from the club. It wasn't a decision he wanted to be a party to and then to live with as a chief executive officer. So there were warning signs well and truly before what's happened this year.
But they are saying that the Essendon saga tipped him over the top. Do you believe that?
No, I'm not totally buying that either, because clearly the behaviour started at Geelong. It wasn't a good part of his life. Yeah. And he never got over that, Bill.
If you know him, Damien, he's actually a good fella.
Absolutely.
He's got a good heart.
Absolutely. And Bill, the players who played with him at both clubs will swear by him as a bloke and a coach.
And a great coach and all that. Yep. But then again, if I've got kids, and mate, if he's trafficking and things like that, there's two different blokes here, and he's got to go to court and he'll face the consequences there. But as a person, he was just a good fella, you know. And I don't know what happened and why it started and whatever happened, but it's just gone downhill.
And his own role in the Essendon drug saga too. I mean, like a lot of Essendon people, I don't think he's ever got his head around it as to his own personal involvement in it. Now, again, everyone had varying degrees of negligence in it. He was fined by the AFL. He hated that. He loathed that to the point where I believe someone else even paid that fine for him. So, again, he just never ticked off on that and hasn't been able to live his life the way he'd wanted to have lived it once footy was not part of it at the end of that 2014 season.
Mm. All right, we move on to that. We've got a Hall of Fame coming up. When's that? How far away? A couple of weeks or a month or so? And we've got a legend to induct, as we always do, Roosie. Have a listen to these five names and then I'll get your thoughts. Wayne Carey, Jason Dunstall, Gary Ablett Sr., Greg Williams, Kevin Sheedy. Good luck.
It's not a bad list.
Chief.
I mean, with the amount of players that have played and coaches have coached, it's a pretty pointy list, isn't it, when you get to the legend status. Look, I sort of perused it before, and probably when I look at it, I think of contribution of the game, you know, in terms of the bigger picture. So I think Kevin Sheedy probably is the one that stands out on that list, because whilst his playing career wasn't, and I'm sure he'd admit it, wasn't anywhere near Wayne Carey, Jason Dunstall, Gary Ablett Sr. and Greg Williams, I think the combination of the two and what he's done to the game itself. Now, having said that, Dame, I'm not aware of the criteria and what, you know, I had an argument one day with Mike Sheehan about Malcolm Blight, ironically, Bill, and I said, I can't believe you guys haven't put Malcolm Blight in, because his body of work was just McGarry medal, yeah. Brownlow medal, Coleman medal,
100
premiership
goals.
Player, premiership yeah. coach. And I said to Mike one day, I said, mate, what's the criteria for this thing? Yeah. What more can you possibly do other than win the Vince Lombardi trophy in the NBA MVP or something like that?
And he won it last year.
Yeah.
He got in last year.
So I'm not exactly sure what the criteria, Damo.
It's all of it, Rusey. Yeah. And you're right to raise it. And I think when you look at those five names there, the one that does it collectively, more so than the other four, is the man you just mentioned.
50 years. He's been in the game 50 years. Yeah. I know we all know him as a coach, but he did play 251 games and three premierships.
Yep.
He won, playing for Richmond.
Yeah.
And then went up to GWS and started that off for them. I couldn't agree with you anymore.
Yeah.
I think the other four will end up legends at some stage. Yeah. Kev's obviously a fair bit older than the other four, so he should go in with the other four to follow at some stage pretty soon after.
Yeah. And I like that. I think we've moved away from judging the footballer as much as a person when it comes to these awards, Jim. I mean, if you want to start judging character, as we were doing for a period of time, Rusey, I don't know who in life can put their hand up and say, I'm going to judge another person's character. So when I raise that because of what's happened with a couple of those names on that list, and I'm glad they're in the conversation to be eligible.
Speaking of clean skins, Rusey.
Rusey's clean skin.
You done anything wrong? You ever get in trouble, front of the Herald Sun?
I forgot to buy the milk last night. Tammy.
You haven't done much wrong, have you?
Oh, look, it's hard for me to answer that question. But I think it's a bit like the Brownlow medal now, the debate about the Brownlow. It's sort of like there's so many, and I was thinking about it the other day, I don't know why, but there's so many more cameras now. Like the criteria has changed so dramatically. Some of the things that players would have got away with in the past because there was no cameras. So this fairest and best philosophy. Over time, things change so dramatically. So I think that's another good example of the scrutiny on everyone, in terms of everyone's behaviours and all that sort of stuff has never been higher. And the scrutiny on the game in terms of fairest, with all the cameras is
speaking of
fever pitch.
The Brownlow, Rusey, are the umpires in 2018 the right people to be judging that? I ask you this not because they're not fine people, because they are, but the game is so ridiculously hard to officiate on ground. So their heads, you talk to the umpires, their heads are just constantly flying, trying to make sure they don't make an error, and they do a great job, I reckon, AFL umpires. But on top of that, should they then be trying to work out who the best player on the ground was?
It's an interesting award now, isn't it? I mean, it's really award that you're probably going to say six people at the start of the year can win it.
Yep.
Because there's so much noise, and umpires are human, and I'm not suggesting there's any form of corruption. All I'm saying is you'd have to be blind Freddy not to read about Dustin Martin, Paddy Dangerfield, Nate Fyfe, Tom Mitchell, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's an award that only six or seven people, I don't think you're ever going to change where that award sits. For me, if I'm a player, I'd love to win the Brownlow. But the most credible award is the Coach Association Award for me. You got two match committees sitting at the end of a game, and we took it very seriously at Melbourne. Jade Rawlings would come and say, Rusey, can you give us your 5-4-3-2-1? He'd get all the coaches to vote. He'd then come back and he'd say, look, Rusey, this is what we've got. What do you think? And I'd say, I reckon that bloke was a bit stiff. Two coaching panels picking the best player in the competition based on our tactics and based on your tactics. It's a pretty prestigious award, really, when you think about it.
Jim, I'm really behind the umpires doing that voting for the Brown. I know that conversation is another one of those annual events, but I just look at 2018. Everyone's got a conflict. I reckon the umpires are still the most pure people in the game. Yeah, and I know you're not questioning that aspect of it. You're questioning their workload, but I still reckon they're closest to the contest. There's an issue with the Dally M medal in the NRL at the moment, whereby they've taken it back control of the voting for that system from the News Limited paper, and they're doing it themselves. On the weekend just gone, or 2 weekends ago, one of the judges was actually not at the game she was meant to be at because she was playing herself. Now, that would happen, I think, if you got an outside panel of judges. Yeah, it was. Ruin Sims, her name was Bill. And very well credentialed.
Yeah. I agree, Dan. That's what I'm saying. I think you've got to leave the Brownlow the same because it is the Brownlow. But I think we've got to start to elevate some of these other awards to the Players Association Most Valuable Player, the Coach Association. I think they've got to come up in where they should sit. The Brownlow is far too high
for
what it is. And I'm not trying to diminish the performance of any of those players. There's never been a poor player Billy win a Brownlow. But I think we've got to balance this out of where these awards sit. And I think we've got to elevate the coach's award. We've got to elevate the player's award.
Purple, you know how big an umpire advocate I am. I just reckon if you quietly off record chatted to a few of them, they'd say, we've got enough to worry about. We're not looking for who's playing well. We're looking to make sure we do our
but
job.
But I think they'd like to vote.
Oh, do you?
It's very important.
I think the other thing, I just finish up, 3-2-1's an antiquated voting system. Yeah, you could be the fourth best player for 22 weeks in a row not get a vote in the Brownlow. And you could make a really strong argument you're the best player in the competition.
Hey, the Bombers, where are we finding them?
I don't like what I see, 2-4 scoreline and going into round six. I still reckon, though, you give them one more chance, Jim, and I reckon Saturday 2-10 against Hawthorn, MCG, that will be the day I determine my own views on where I think they're going to be at the end of the year. But don't like what I see, Roosie. I didn't see your show on Monday night, so I don't know what you said about Joe Danaher, but there's issues there, aren't there?
Yeah, look, there's two things I think for Essendon is they're trying to play a style of footy that's opposite to what Richmond do. It's really hard. They're trying to be a back half team. Yep. They're trying to be, let's go from one end of the ground to the other. Richmond is a premiership team, and we always reference them because you try to beat the best, is get the ball forward, keep it there for as long as you can. I think the Bombers are trying to change that, but they haven't been successful at all in doing that. So that's not sustainable. That style of footy, it might get you the grand final, which did last year, but they got smashed by the Swans. So for them to be a premiership team, Wisher has to change that. I believe he's trying to. And Joey Danaher, who we all sort of thought was the heir apparent to Buddy, I just don't know whether he's got the footy smarts at the moment, Billy. You're a good centre forward, and the ability to get up the ground and get back and travel over distances. Yeah. It's funny, I've watched a lot of their footy more on television. I don't even see him on the screen.
No.
You don't actually see him on the screen.
He's not in the right spot sometimes.
So he can't be on the right spot. I'm looking forward to seeing them play live because I'm trying to work out, where does he disappear to? Because at the moment, if you're watching Essendon on television, you'd be mistaken for thinking he's not actually on the ground. You don't actually see him on the screen, JB.
What about I loved your discussion around Michael Hurley too, and the fact that he is often the last defender and then, you know, as you see in the EPL, just trading kicks sideways until you can find an outlet kick. So he ends up with three possessions in a chain of completely uncontested footy. The arm across argument with him, we all were fascinated with the Cats and the way they handled Matty Scarlett, who I believe is the best defender in the last 20 years, and yet he often was basically the third man. You know, they had the other two, Big Harry and Domsey, looking after the two big forwards so that they could free him up. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, we had a great discussion on Sunday show, Triple M Sunday show, about it. On the back of Johnny Ralph's wrote an article about Rance and that. I don't think you can compare some of today's defenders to Silvani and to Langford and to Pert and to even Lynchy when he played down there, because we've got this new hybrid type of player, and Rance is one of them. He's the best.
Yep.
You got Rance, Hurley, McGovern, your boy Tarrant is probably the best one-on-one defender. Lyndon Dunn, who's now gone to Collingwood. Oscar McDonald is the P. Jake Lever's come in to play the third tall. So this discussion is a new type of player that we didn't see in the 80s and 90s, and it's really crept in. Dustin Fletcher probably started a little bit.
Yeah.
Scarlett started to do it towards the end. But now we've got multiple very, very, very good defenders that don't play on good players. They play on the third or fourth and float off. So I think the discussion in comparing them is completely flawed because it's a hybrid type of defender that we have in the competition.
Rampy does that. He just reads it, doesn't he, beautifully.
Well, Grundy and Rampy can defend one-on-one, but the ability to read, get off a player. But we've also got a player, Billy, I reckon, in a lot of teams, that Lever was great. And a great example, Hardigan and Talia took the best player. So Lever's whole upbringing from 19 to 22 was not to play anyone. Now, it's not a criticism of him, JB.
No, exactly.
It's very hard to go up the coach and say, mate, hang on, what's this role you got me playing? Can I go and play on someone? So he's very good at it, but it's then very hard to transition from that into a one-on-one defender because you just haven't got the tools to do it.
And Damo, Friday night? Oh, hang on.
I was going to say, Friday night, GWS have got a few injuries, Bill. We told you a couple of weeks ago about Jeremy Cameron's toe, a big toe on his left foot,
and
the
now
kicking foot.
Deledio has been great.
And Deledio out as well with a hamstring concern. Serious issues.
Big game. How are you getting down to Geelong on Friday night?
I think you know
what
how
about
we're
this,
down.
Roosie? Yeah. You heard this?
You'll be sickened by this,
what
Roosie.
Happened? Oh, so Damien, tell Paul.
You tell Paul, because I'm not party to the arrangement. I am ashamed.
The
actually.
Friday night team who get ahead of themselves, no doubt about that.
Very close.
Saturday, very good. Sunday, very good. They've got two helicopters.
You believe this?
Picked up here at Crown and flying down to Geelong to GMHBA Stadium and landing there. Two helicopters. These flogs, Friday night.
So, traffic's pretty bad.
So paid by themselves, not paid for.
No, they're not paying a cent. No. How would this have fitted into the Bloods culture when you were there?
Talk about no eye in team.
and you had the no wanker policy. How would that have gone with these blokes?
No, it's you.
Kirky talked about the Cortinas versus the Ferraris. There was no helicopters in that discussion.
What did Kirky talk about that night in front of the telly? I'm going to tell you how we work here at the Swans. Were you giggling at that, Rosie?
No, that was on...
Channel 7.
Oh, Channel 7. Yeah. No, I didn't see that night.
Oh, you did say...
it's real wanker stuff, Rosie. I'm 100% with you. Good to see you. Thanks very much for coming in. Well done, Purple.
See you.